Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Someone's f***ing movie. Let's start already.
Only thing is, we got one problem. We don't have any water.
How about pissing in it?
That's a good idea. Get up here.
How do you know to work?
How old are you, kid?
15. And the name's Danny, not kid.
Well, when you grow up, you'll know these things, Danny. Now get up here and piss in the radiator.
Such a goddamn jock.
This is Film Sack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Film Sack. This is Film Sack, episode 427, mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I'm Scott Johnson. Joining me today, Brian, never fight over a fire, Dunaway.
You gotta fight over the fire. How about you gonna roast your nuts? Oh, hi. Listen up, my young parachuting comrades. We'll be dropping you off in Colorado onto a mostly unoccupied field. Worst case scenario, the wind blows you to the parking lot of the local school where we are told that we could encounter some very light resistance. That does happen. Please do not shoot kids in the face who are simply looking out the windows of the schoolhouse. Remember, we're the good guys. Any questions? Yes, Ivan. What do we do if some of the jocks escape in a truck and head to the hills and create a troop of guerrilla fighters that force our hand to kill the locals as retribution, as a result, create a vicious cycle of revenge that never ends? Okay, Ivan. That is some serious foreshadowing. Just remember, we're the good guys here. Yes, Ernesto, you have a follow-up. Will we meet any young American ladies that we can rape and pillage? Would someone please push Ernesto at the plane? Thank you. But so answer his question. Just remember, we are the good guys here. So if you do rape and pillage, be sure to wear a condom. Okay, you know what? You know what? I think we may be the bad guys. So just forget all that stuff I said earlier. Well, let's just go be bad guys.
My favorite part of that was that really long, complicated thing you said very fast, and then you said even instead of Ivan at the end. It was the only part of it. That was really great.
Oh, dang it.
Also, that condom bit. Woo! Keep those emails flowing, everybody.
ASP, is this PG-13 movie, the first one?
Yeah,
it had to have some PG-13 material.
Sure. That's a good point. Yes. We'll get to that in a second. Also, Randy, drink this blood, and you will be a deer man, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Hi.
Randy.
Did I ever tell you boys about the time I ran the number one chain of invasion preparation stores in the western states?
Nope.
We put them out on country roads completely by themselves, and we called them gasoline. And we had a slogan, I'm sure y'all remember. Come on down and prep for World War III. And when you see our prices, remember, freedom isn't free. It's a great business, right up until the actual invasion and the breakdown of rights and social norms, as long as you follow my three prepper rules. Number one, don't stock items that people actually buy. You know, like first aid supplies, army rations, oh, military camping equipment. Remember, you're a gas station, and people want to come into your shop and see several hundred cans of cream of mushroom soup and big boxes overstuffed with arrows. Number two, when you're packing up a truck with supplies, make sure the truck is completely ludicrously stuffed full. That maximizes profit for you and entertainment for others who see it go off-road later. Number three, don't actually go with them kids yourself.
Yes.
You got to stay behind and get yourself killed. Trust me, this makes sense.
Oh, you're done.
No, that's it. That's a good point.
That's good. No, it's good. It's good. I like the way that ended. I just wasn't prepared for it. All right. And finally, Brian, he and Jed are all used up Ibbot.
You're going to notice a little bit of a similarity here. Clear my throat. What's that, boys? You say the town's been taken over by paratrooping, gun-toting, pajama-flage-wearing Cubans and Russians? I'm going to send you into the mountains for your own safety, but before that, run into the store and get yourself some supplies. Now, I wish I had a cool outdoor equipment store with camping supplies and guns like Jimmy's dad up further up on down the highway, but I decided to open up a Build-A-Bear workshop instead. So, let's get started over here. Let's pick out your favorite bear or bunny rabbit. Oh, quit blubbering, Danny, and pick a damn animal. We don't have a lot of time. So, all right, now you've got your choice of stuffing. Pick up the pace now. The Russians are coming. Danny, quit swallowing the Build-A-Bear hearts. Damn it. Those are supposed to go into the bears, not you. Perfect. Oh, look at yours, C. Thomas Howell. I hope you give him a cute name. You know, picking a name is the most important part of the Build-A-Bear experience. Danny, quit peeing in the stuffing machine.
Like Danny peed in the radiator, and that's all he wants to do now is pee on stuff. Okay. I like it. I like that would be his fate. I don't know why I never thought of that, but all right. Hey, look at us. It's us doing Red Dawn finally. I know, guys. It's been since 2009 we started the show, and nearly 10 years later, we're finally lifting up the coffin and opening it with a big title on it called Red Dawn. It shocks me it's taken us this long, seriously. Like, Red Dawn. This movie, I saw it like 15 times as a kid. Constantly on. Right. I had VHS tapes that were multiple copies, and I got one before they were even out. It was some friend of mine got me a bootleg, and I even did a short animated film with claymation where the soundtrack I used in the background was gunfire from this movie.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
I was so into this movie, I couldn't get enough of Red Dawn in the day.
That's interesting. Yeah. Oh, so if you're wondering why now, because it's still, I don't think it's ever been on Netflix at a time that we were watching it. And it's still not on Netflix. I caught this on my free trial of Stars through Hulu because I had a 10-day. But you guys, I think, watched it on Amazon Prime, right?
Amazon Prime.
It was on Prime, which, you know, hopefully a bunch of people have access to it. But it's one of those movies that even if I'm a little surprised we didn't just make some exception for some DVD copy of it or something, because it's just, to me, it's so...
It seems like if there was going to be if we were going to do something for Nerdtacular, this would have been a contender for one of the movies.
Oh, for sure. And mostly not so much for what the actual content is, because ironically, I don't have a ton of clips today because it's not that clippable.
It's mostly gunfire,
it's
right?
A lot of gunfire. It's a lot of dour attitude and kind of...
It's also a lot of... Oh, hey, isn't that so-and-so from all those other 80s movies? Oh, hey, look at her. That's What's-Her-Face from all those other 80s movies.
Yeah, like in Charlie Sheen's case, this is his first film, like theatrical film.
Can I give you two confessions really quick?
Yeah.
Number one, because you talked about how many times you'd seen this movie, this was my first viewing of Red Dawn.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. This one totally zipped by me in the 80s. I never
Usually I would say you're so lucky because now you get to finally see it, but
it's like now it's like, oh, I wish you would have seen it back when it was enjoyable.
Exactly.
Kind of, yeah. Like I wish Randy had seen Time Bandits when it was in theaters instead of seeing it so much later on here.
I actually think Time Bandits though is a film that gets better with repeated viewings. You just have to get used to it, and you have to start looking at it differently with each time.
I can see that.
This is also my first time seeing Red Dawn, and
we've
talked before about how there's an age like hole that movies fall into, and this movie was the very first film ever given a PG-13 rating, and it came out long before I was 13. And so there was a, like, I always just think of this time frame, and it's a little different for every person, but there's this time frame where you're maybe old enough that you have, if you have extremely hippie parents, you're watching adult movies, but maybe not. And most people, you're not yet. And
let's,
there's
let's
movies
call
coming
grown
out.
Up movies,
yeah, I wouldn't sure, call sure, PG-13 okay. adult. So but I, my parents are just too stupid. They didn't know. They were just like, oh, that's,
I was,
that's not
I was
R, 12. So go ahead.
But anyway, right. but there's this gap where you're old enough. To, some of your friends maybe see these movies, but you don't. And then some years go by, and now you're old enough, you're 15 or whatever, you're old enough to just grab these movies and see them yourself. But the time has passed. They're now three or 4 years in the past, and there's new movies coming out for you to see. And so you watch the new that. Movies that are coming out, and there's now you have a gap. There's just this like gap 5 years, you know, and you just never see the movie in the gap.
This was 1984, which is a banner year in our opinions, as we've talked before. That was great films. Also a great time to for, you know, a little shift in how things were portrayed. And I was 12 at the time, and this was the first PG-13 movie. And so I don't think the local theater really knew how to, you know, what is this PG-13? I mean, we know how to keep kids out of R-rated movies, but, you know, not every 13-year-old carries around their driver's license. So, you know, it's like you had to kind of make a judgment call. It's he looks like
real quick, though, I want to throw out my second, because I had two confessions. Here's my second one.
Oh, yeah. Bring it back.
Until the end credits rolled, I thought that was Emilio Estevez.
Oh, that is hilarious.
That's awesome. Is great.
You thought Charlie Sheen was Emilio Estevez?
Yeah. I thought Charlie Sheen was Emilio Estevez. It's funny because at one point it's like, I honestly, swear to God, said this to Tina, man, back then Emilio looked a lot more like Charlie Sheen than he does now.
Hilarious.
but he didn't fully look like Charlie Sheen. He looked like this weird halfway through the morph software. Halfway through the morph software of Charlie Sheen to Emilio Estevez.
Yeah, you know what? I can kind of see it now that you say it. I can kind of picture what you're
makes
saying.
Sense.
It's you can. And it's funny, but it's also understandable because this is one of the worst shot films we've ever seen on this show. And I just can't stop thinking about, why did the director and the cinematographer do this? Why did they have so many shots where I understand not looking directly into the face of the people, but why do they have so many shots where I'm looking over their shoulder from behind and just seeing the tip of their nose? Like what
trying
was
to be
it?
Edgy probably, or trying
was
to
it,
be,
I think we're trying to be, I think we're trying to be more like a war movie, and especially like the 70s gritty kind of war movie. So I agree with Randy. It just, especially in that part, it failed. And the edits, because sometimes I'd be following along with a character, and I'm like, okay, where are we at now? That makes absolutely zero sense. I didn't even know we just traversed a day's worth of travel. And it's what happened.
There's a lot of that in this movie, and I totally agree with this sentiment. Even though I loved this movie and seen it so many times, I think it's ripe for a good remake. Not that Hemsworth thing that was bad.
I kind of like
was
now I want to see the Hemsworth.
I kind of like it.
The movie, it's okay, but the movie was, it got the message is wrong. Yes. And part of it is we're out of the Cold War in a way that's significant. And it's like it's a different kind of threat. So they take it in different places and all of that. And so
wasn't
I understand
North
that.
Korean, isn't that what was, the, didn't they play that?
Yeah.
Certainly is what they would do with these, like right now, if they were to do a remake.
It's probably, I think that'd be what it is. Or I think that's, that is what it is. But here's the thing. Yeah. If they're going to do it again, what I would do is put it in the 80s again. Like just go ahead and make it retro. Who cares? It doesn't have to be a modern take. And let's have a better shot, better paced, better plotted experience. Because I think there's something there. There's something there.
The pacing is so crazy on this. I mean, the movie begins, you get 10 seconds of schoolroom setup before the whole thing begins, right? You don't get any sort of character like, oh, there's this guy and he's like the tough guy, and here's this other guy and he's like the weenie guy.
And most of the time you complain that they don't give you enough character. They don't give you enough. They give you too much character development. It's like, oh, I don't, just get on with the action. But man,
you would you would think, like, I guess we've read that the director was a protege of Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
And you would think that he would have also like really learned the lessons of things like Star Wars episodes 4 and 5, which are all about team building and character building. And then you have your conflict, and then it's very, very like we're all invested. And also, by the way, it doesn't help me that you're constantly surprising me with your action. Like, I actually get a lot more entertained when you show me how we got to the action, the moment of action. So, for instance, the spider hole ambush.
Yeah.
Was
awesome. But it made me stop and say, whoa, when did they dig those enormous holes? There's a lot of industry that had to go into this preparation. Why didn't you show me some of that? That would have been really entertaining. Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, and it would have been nice, right? A little montage of like how they prepare this. It felt so like, wow, everything really had to be perfectly predicted in how Jennifer Grey was going to get the package in there and blow it up. But then still, you know, if there's any of them left over, she has to run a specific direction and nothing can possibly go wrong. You know, she can't get caught up closer to them, because if she's too close to them, then when they come out to shoot, they're going to shoot her as well. I mean, there is so much that could have gone wrong.
This claim that they make in some of the trivia about John Millis being, or Milius, I guess, as I say it, being a protege of Spielberg is kind of like saying, I'm the protege of my roommate in college, because, you know, this is 84. Spielberg's been around for a bit, but not really very long. And I don't think this guy learned shit. So whatever his claim is, like, it really is not that great. And it's unfortunate, because I think that the core concept that's at play here is really solid and could be applied in a bunch of ways. And it's just a great idea. And I love, you know, I love this sort of end time sort of look at stuff like this and things happening and disrupting your normal everyday life and turning it somewhere else. And that's interesting to me. And I like it from the point of it happening all the way to Mad Max level. Like, I like all those levels, and this just is not well made version.
I was trying to think of what, go ahead.
Does it still have to, I mean, does it still feel like, let's say you take all the acting, the editing, the pacing, all that stuff out of it. The whole premise relies on, all right, is it believable that a group of teenagers, whimpering, sobbing, freaked out kids who are, like, don't forget, living in the elements without any sort of structure or anything like that. They're basically, you have to think about this, they're in sleeping bags in October in the mountains of Colorado.
Yeah.
I won't even sleep without four comforters in October in Colorado, like in the house with a heating system.
But, right. Yeah, yeah. And so this was this script is a flip the script idea of what happens when we go into other countries. Right. So there was a little bit of anti-war, but also celebration of war going on here what would happen if we were on the receiving end.
Well, in flipping that script, by the way, that's, the conceit is this, to answer Ibbot's actual question, which is these are kids in the way that when other nations find themselves at siege with one another,
occupied,
a lot of times the guerrilla stuff ends up being a bunch of kids in the jungle. And by kids, I mean, you know, 12 to 18. And so it's not that crazy of an idea, but the way that they present it here, I think, is just not good enough. I think they could have gone further. I think the acting could have helped it. I think that if everybody was as good an actor as Henry Dean Stanton, we'd have a better film.
Oh, I wanted more of Harry Dean Stanton.
Yeah.
I could get really off in the weeds talking about how guerrilla insurgencies actually work in reality. Like, if they fail, they fail. That's that. And you don't have a story. But when they work, they always work in the same ways. And this movie isn't realistic. And that's fine. Like, let's not hold it against a movie that it's not realistic.
Right,
like,
right.
Well, we do have a higher degree.
We have a higher expectation when it comes to war movies, I think.
And believing a kid can shoot webs out of his wrists or not, depending on which version of Spider-Man you're watching, is one thing where it's like, okay, I'm there's so many other things that I have to kind of suspend disbelief for. This is a fantasy film. Whereas Red Dawn, it's supposed to feel like this could happen. This is what potentially World War III could be. And so do I believe that no matter how
much their
backs are against the wall. Yeah, totally. And no matter how much these kids' backs are against the wall, they can come through and organize and mobilize into a unit that can take out battalions of Cuban and Russian trained military personnel.
Right.
You just have to have this level of ineptness of the opponent kind of set up ahead of time.
Yeah, those invaders make every mistake imaginable.
Yes.
It's insane how often those invaders are just driving down a road completely unprotected without checkpoints or anything. Like, it's insane. But
right.
I want to grant it that. Like, yes, I want a Red Dawn HBO series. And I want it to be, I think I want it to be made by the guy who made Chernobyl, because I want to know what he would do with it.
Yeah. But it's, oh, it's my gosh. You know what? You've got my attention, dude. That's a great idea.
I'd sign on for that.
And that would address the pacing problem, because you could have it spread out over a 6-episode miniseries or whatever, and it wouldn't feel like October. Oh, kids take another November.
Right. Yeah. Or you could do 5 seasons of this and make them full 12-episode seasons. Like, that's a great idea. They need to stop trying to make this a movie and let's make it a show.
Isn't that essentially what Jericho was, though? Wasn't that kind of...
Jericho was bad, though.
Well, Jericho wasn't bad. No, Jericho had potential.
Jericho was like post... Jericho was all the power went out, nobody can get it on again, and then
okay, so Jericho fell in a time where we were still trying to figure out good TV.
I just like the power went out and nobody could get it on again. I'm trying to make the leap of nobody can get the power back on again, but all I can think of is, damn, there's no power. None of us can get it on.
No more babies. That's it. Humanity dies a slow death because we can't procreate anymore.
We can't get the power.
Yep. There you go. That's it.
But I think to get back to the movie, I think the major problem here was that our director, just a couple years before, had directed Conan.
So he's done that.
So he wrote and directed Conan in 82. This time he is taking on a cast of really young actors. We got to remember that Patrick Swayze, C. Thomas Howell, Leah Thompson, Charlie Sheen, all these people were very young actors, and he had to like coax a performance out of these people. And this is also rumored at the time that Patrick Swayze and Jennifer Grey were not on the friendliest of terms.
I didn't know that. Jennifer Grey claims it was the best movie she ever made, or the most fun she ever had making a movie.
I've heard several things, but one of the things I heard is that they had some conflict, and maybe that was more in the next movie they did, which a few years later, Dirty Dancing.
So
there's a lot of moving pieces. This was kind of a low budget affair for what they were doing, and this director's got to coordinate all these young actors and also coordinating all this, all these shots in this sprawling area and got to get military assets in. I mean, oh my gosh, this was a huge undertaking in my opinion. So I kind of give it a little bit. I kind of step back just a little bit and go, okay, this is a tough order to fill.
Yeah. I think what happened to me as a 13-year-old kid is I felt it. And I believed it, and I bought into it because the concept was strong. And when you're a kid, you're less worried about, technical perfection or movies having exactly the right pacing or plot and stuff and all that. So I was a lot more forgiving to that. And what I just could not get over was this concept that teenagers like me, or ones that were just older than me, could grab a gun and make this happen. And I just forgot about all the plot holes. What it was. Now, it's impossible to watch it now and not see those, though.
Sure.
So it frustrated me.
It's not good. Yeah. It's not good.
Frustrated me because I really have such powerful feelings for it as a thing growing up, like we do about a lot of things we see when we're young. But a treatment that somebody like FX or HBO or AMC or somebody could give this as a series would be really great. Like I think there's lessons still to be learned from the concept. If you want to set it in the 80s, even better, because I just think it fits really nicely, and you still make it Russians and Cubans. Like, be truer to that stuff.
Do you still get the importance of our fears at that time, though, when we're so far away from being afraid of Russians and
I mean,
Cubans?
That's a great question, right? Because you and I would see it and go, oh yeah, totally, this was the Cold War. Oh. But other people will see it and go, or like my son will see it and say, well, I don't get it. What's why the Russians?
Right. Cubans.
Yeah. Cubans.
Right. It's the Red Scare. You can't have Red Dawn without having communist
cigar people.
To my son, Nicholas, which is still out of his own time. He thinks that if you say Cubans, his only reference point is that Seinfeld episode where Kramer had those three Cuban guys living in his apartment because they could bring him cigars. Like, he has no reference point for Cuba. other than, ooh, dude, why are those cigars illegal here?
Plus, plus there's no fear, because we were still, even in 84, we were very much in fear of everything that was going on in the Cold War. It was a very tense time. How do you bring that? Because I think we were all afraid during the 80s, thinking that, oh, you know, won't be long and I'll be old enough to fight in a war. Will a war come again? Because every decade prior seems like there was a war going on.
Well,
and so
I'll tell you what, though, I have bad news, maybe. I don't know if it's bad news or good news, but maybe this is just the way of humanity. But I remember when the first Gulf War happened, I was like 19 or 20, whatever I was. Mm-hmm. And I remember being freaked out that I was going to get drafted.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I can tell you that I now have a 19-year-old son. And 2-3 weeks ago, when sabers were rattling about Iran, right, he came to me and says, Dad, is there like a chance I can get drafted for this thing? And I think the fear just transcends. Anytime somebody tells you that without your say, you may be pulled into a conflict that will end your life and you will have to end other lives. Like that's a horrific idea. And this movie touches on some of those themes, but it never
very
quite,
lightly.
Yeah. It never quite gets there. It just makes a lot of assumptions. There's a thing at the end that a lot of people think is cheesy and would never happen. It's kind of this trope where, in fact, it deserves a trope thing. I'm going to play one. Here you go. It's where the leader of this whole thing, of the invasion, the one that's in charge of everything, in the end respects his enemy so much that he lets them go. Yeah. Despite the fact that they completely disrupted their invasion plans, he lets Swayze and the dying brother go. And even though I know that that's horse shit and that would never happen, there is something about that whole sequence that really sews it up for me. And I wish the rest of the movie was good at this, like the brothers and their relationship. And I don't even like Charlie Sheen, but their relationship really worked for me. Really
Thanks
spoke
for dropping
to me
that in there. I don't even like Charlie Sheen,
but it just, I mean, what we didn't know then, what we know now, but it was a great, I thought they handled that stuff really well. And I found it heartfelt and emotional.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, really good. We land the brothers at the very place of which the other touchstone of emotion is, which is Harry Dean Stanton talked about. Remember when we used to take you to the swing? When I used to be at the swings and I'd pick you up, and you know that was kind of their safe spot. Yeah. And so they got to go there and die. Even though Harry Dean Stanton told him he wasn't going to pick him up anymore, he's just not doing it. Even if he's dead, it's like, no, I'm not doing it.
Remember all those things I did that made you hate me? This is why.
Suck it up. Suck it up, buttercup.
He was great until he started yelling and avenge me. That was dumb.
That was great.
The whole story here is something that you have to stop putting in context. If you put the story in context, it's meaningless. Like, this is a tiny town. It's one of 10,000 small towns in the United States. Like, ultimately, what are you fighting over is not important. Like, what's important is what's going on elsewhere. And so, but if you allow yourself to go down that road, then just don't even watch the movie, because the movie doesn't have that context. It's entirely this one little thing, right? And the trope that you just made me think of is called Day of the Jackboot. Have you ever heard this?
No.
This phrase? So day, you know, in the day of the jackboot, like we have been, we're in a place that where these thugs are running everything. And there's lots of movies like that, like Escape from L.A.
Sure.
I think we talked about it then too, didn't we?
Yeah. Pretty common theme. I didn't, because I'd never seen this movie before, it never occurred to me that this is actually the best. Like, you have to portray these jackbooted thugs running the town. And they do. Yeah. And it's amazing how fast they start running the town. Like, for like within minutes of invading.
Within minutes and a title card that says October.
Right. Things happen.
A lot of things happen since September.
So much hand wavy October. Like, by the way, November now, by the way.
And that's a trick I don't mind sometimes when it's used right, where it's like, oh my gosh, a month has passed. Or a month is a theme almost. Like, these horrible things happen in the month of October. And then it says November. Yeah, you're like, what will happen in November? But I don't think they use it right here. It's not great.
I don't think they use it right here either, because there's so much that you got to really assume, like, okay, I understand that that the town has changed over that time, but I want to see how these guys are training. I want to see how they're surviving on more than just deer and berries, because that's all we really ever see them forage.
Yeah.
How are what kind of shelter did they build? And
how are they getting all that paramilitary gear constantly? I understand some of that stuff is like, oh, they blew the tank up. All right, well, they got all this shit now. Where'd they get it? The blown up tank? Yeah. Like, where are you getting it?
Right.
Yeah.
What right. wasn't thought through was that they would capture gear and then they would look and sound exactly like their enemies. Like they made the snow camo that the teenagers were wearing a little different than the snow camo the invaders were wearing. I'm like, no, they would have gotten that from those guys.
Pajamaflage, you mean? You know?
Yeah. That dirt, by the way. Whoa. Did you make that up? Because that's really good. Yeah. Pajamaflage.
I made that up.
That's Pajamaflage. Awesome. Oh my gosh, mark that one down because that's great. I couldn't think what to call that shit they were wearing. It was awful. And I couldn't think what to call
baggy,
it.
Baggy, like really baggy. How is this both protection and hiding you from the element or hiding you from your opponents?
Yeah, that's just ridiculous.
It was literally the first note I wrote in my watching this film.
Camouflage. All right, sorry. We just had to celebrate that for a moment because that's really good. But yeah, there's a shot where they were, what's the name of that historic point that they were at, and they were misinterpreting the sign.
When they were in front of the state.
Arapaho.
Yeah, they were in front of the.
That was so dumb. That little selfie they took, so dumb, dude.
Yeah, but that was the idea, right? That these people were very comfortable in their dominance. And they got their comeuppance.
It seems to hear that they've fought a big battle here.
It's
Cuban, bad, but I just had to.
Right. It's too bad because it was actually a very humorous point in that scene. And I didn't, it was so subtle. I didn't even realize it was happening until after it happened. But the one of the generals that was there with him, or the upper up, he got shot. And I thought he got shot in the back with that arrow. He got shot in the butt.
Yeah, it was in the
and
butt.
So when he was screaming, "Oh my God, I'm dying!" Then it made me laugh
because I didn't realize.
But I kept thinking it was in the back. I'm like, "Yeah, you are going to die if you got punctured in your lung." But then I'm like, "You got your butt meat." Okay.
I was laughing no matter what because that was just poorly done. Like it just made him seem like, "Oh yeah, this highfalutin general, such a puss." He's like, "The arrow is in my bum. I'm going to die from the bum arrow." Like. And then when she laid into him with the AK and just sprayed him with bullets, I was like, good, dude. That guy sucked. Freaking pajama.
Yeah, pajama. Leah Thompson. I don't think I've ever enjoyed a Leah Thompson performance more than this.
I agree with you that guy sucked, but the best moments in the film, the best moments in the film were when the invaders are talking to each other, which had just happened. They had been standing on a roadside, taking pictures, pretending to know what the English sign said. And those are the best parts of the film. The best. When they're in town and they have their collaborator, you know?
They shouldn't be, but they are. They are good. I mean, what they do is they give us the bigger picture. They help us understand the overall threat. Like, it's important that they even exist. But I still wish that I wish the kids had more stuff to do. Again, no offense to any of these actors. I grew up with all these guys and like them in lots of things and all that. But I don't know. I feel like
there was no character development at all. And so, you know, that may be true in a true wartime sense because you kind of get locked into to being whatever your environment creates.
Yeah.
But as a story, you need somebody to grow.
Well, that is conceptually what they're going for here, right? It's like all the norms are broken and it's immediate. Everything you thought was normal, like sitting in this class talking to your teacher and then noticing there's a bunch of paratroopers out the window. From then on, all norms are out the window. Nothing's normal again. If anything, they just kind of broke that themselves because when they came back to town to check how things were going,
right.
Nobody seemed to give a poop who these boys, famous boys were who escaped and then killed
everybody's
guys.
Looking for you. Well, nobody seems to be looking for you. Even the guy who was looking at you doesn't appear to be looking for you.
Yeah, there are people staring at you who aren't looking for you. Like, what the hell is that about? Like, that really annoyed me, but
that's the incompetence of an occupying army that's there simply by orders and not by villainy. You know, they're not there to be villains. They're just there to be pawns.
Once again, don't forget, this is a small town in the middle of nowhere. They're not sending their best to occupy this town. Remember that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't really think about that. It's not like they're... And also, I noticed that the American military certainly is not sending their best to help the kids out very often or very quickly.
Well, we're somebody in spring.
I wrote something down I want to share with you guys. I freaking love Powers Booth and
oh god, so good.
Yes. In villain roles later in life. Yeah. And right. Rest in peace, Powers Booth. He died a couple years ago.
Yeah.
I'm watching this movie and I'm like, oh, young Powers Booth sucks. I'm sad that young Powers. And then I looked him up. He was 36.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
He should have some acting chops by this point.
Yeah,
I don't
maybe.
Understand.
He's fine. I didn't bother me. I don't think his character was all that well realized. It was super stereotypy and stuff and just sort of fit whatever. It's also a little creepy with Jennifer Grey, but that's fine. Whatever. I mean,
it was Leah Thompson.
I keep screwing them up. It's Leah Thompson who said she's never had more fun on a movie.
Right. Not Jennifer Grey.
Grey
says the worst experience of her life.
Yeah. She had a bad time.
Leah Thompson is all over the place in this movie because it is like, she is so broken. Weird.
By the end of this, you're thinking, oh my God, she has the potential to, like, when they get this thing resolved, still go on like a doomsday prepper, maniacal.
I wrote down something about Leah Thompson. There were so many scenes where you actually can see her, like unlike the rest of the movie, you can actually see her and she looks like Hermione stands with a fist. Mm. Does that make sense to you?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Anyone?
Yeah. Actually, the way the women were portrayed in general, I liked in this movie, and I think it played against type. Most movies back then were still sort of stuck in the whole girls are always the ones in trouble, men have to save them, they're hysterical or they're upset.
And that's about to change. This is 84, and that's about to change.
Maybe,
right,
a little bit. You could argue that it's still changing. I guess what I'm saying is if you look at it in a vacuum, this movie subverts all of that pretty well. These are two very strong female characters.
I don't know about being strong. Jennifer Grey is like, she never says hardly even like three lines that I think she says in the whole movie. And she's constantly, they're using her as bait because apparently she's the only thing that the soldiers on the other side are attracted to. Because every time they see Jennifer Grey, they just like,
oh, they lose it. Yeah. They're like, oh, look at that.
Oh, that's Jennifer Grey.
Hope she never gets a nose job. I like it the way it is, they said to themselves.
Right.
But here's what I like about her. She had two big jobs. Squeeze the orange on top of Swayze's head and lay on a grenade for an hour or however long she was there.
She cooked that thing, boy. Yeah. She's like, come on. Come touch my dead body. Do it. I dare you.
I mean, the whole idea, that's frustrating too. The whole idea was he was supposed to shoot her and end her misery. No. He couldn't do it. So she says, fine, give me a grenade. So the idea is that she's going to use, she pull the pen out and give me the grenade. She's going to use the grenade to end her own life. Instead, she dies or falls asleep and just leaves it on there like a booby trap. That's fine. Right. Except the whole point was to end it, not booby trap. Like, pick your thing. What we don't get is her decision making going, oh, this kind of hurts. I think I'll just use this now. Well, wait a minute. What if I slept on it? I changed my mind
on how I want this to go down.
Yeah. It's kind of annoyed me.
If it doesn't work, I'm going to be in some big trouble.
It annoyed me a little bit, but I got over it. Yeah. See Thomas Howell? He's a psycho in this. He's that trope, though, right? Where you start out like, oh, he's the one crying the most and the most upset and the most nervous. Got the Star Wars hat and all that. And then later on, he becomes like the most awful killer. You know,
and the other kid you're kind of worried about becoming sitting on top of a schoolhouse.
And at first, I couldn't figure out if they were trying to say only the jocks would survive because I was like, these all like jock folk. But then they started developing the characters going, no, you know, Daryl, he's kind of he's the class president, you know, so there's no computer nerds in that, or no communication technology nerds.
Oh, that would have been great. That new one, I think, does.
That too, 84.
Yeah.
It would have been. It's all Mac SEs and stuff. But the original Mac, I guess, wouldn't it? 84? Yeah.
The pre-SE 30s.
Yeah, and the IBM PS2s and whatever. Anyway.
What'd y'all think about Mr. Teasdale? Frank McRae's character is the teacher who just walks out. Hey, how's it going, fellas? Think you guys are in the wrong place.
I mean, I think he thought that they, like today, if I saw a bunch of dudes and guns and stuff outside, and it looked official, like military official, I'd walk out there. I would assume there'd be rules in place where you're not just going to mow people down. So he did what I think I would do, especially in a case where you got a bunch of kids who are sort of your, that's your stewardship for that hour, you know, like you can't just leave him in there. You're going to go out and see what's going on. So I liked that. It was short though. It wasn't there very long.
Yeah, it was very short, but it was very important for like, it's so much foreshadowing. I mean, everything was foreshadowing. It's just like, oh, here's a little story. Guess what? It's going to come back later in the movie. We just told you the whole movie.
Yeah.
Everything's like it was constantly giving me foreshadowing. I'm like, too much.
Oh, they foreshadowed everything always. But they really got going quick. And that's the thing I don't remember from my previous 14 viewings.
Yeah, me too.
Is how I thought there was a lot more lead up to the class getting shot up and a lot more tension there. And there was none. It was just like, here we go.
I was laughing out of the gate because Randy had said earlier, like the cinematography and the shots, they didn't seem to get the shots that they needed. Yeah. And so they were like, there's one scene where Charlie Sheen is walking after he's been dropped off by Jed's character and he's walking into the school. And, you know, Jed's already in our minds is already like, you know, almost a half mile down the road.
Yeah.
And then Charlie Sheen turns around and goes, thanks, Jed. See you later, Jed. And it's like, who's he talking to?
It's like weird editing. And then the other things, they really got it. Like they nailed it. What I will remember about the initial invasion is a paratrooper murdering a Pontiac Ventura. That was so well done. And like I got to see the car with a hood popping open and the fire happening, and it was like there are kids inside and they're freaking out. Like 1969 Pontiac Ventura nailed. It's like other things I don't remember other parts of that sequence, so you must not have shot it very well.
It's unfortunate.
A lot of missing shots, a lot of editing at the end, because there's a lot of soundstage stuff. Like,
sure,
man, Powers Booth was just like screaming in a microphone somewhere when he was
there was ADR across the board, like tons of it. Yes. And it was annoying. It was the annoying kind where it's just I can't stand when there's supposed to be just dialogue and they have to ADR the whole thing in. I hate that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and they do that with the
outside
whole
shots. You have to sometimes.
Yeah, it's almost always outside shots, right? But like in newer films, they have better tech, better mic tech, isolating tech. They can make that stuff work. But this is 84. They couldn't really do it. This film actually had a record for a while. It was in the Guinness Book of World Records for having the most acts of violence of any film up to that time. According to their calculations, 134 acts of violence occur per hour, or that's 2.23 violent acts per minute.
And if you don't believe that, you can get the special edition DVD that actually has the kill counter show.
Does it really
on
the bot a little score? Scorecard.
Yeah.
I was surprised when you said that this was the first PG-13 film, because I'd always been under the impression that it was Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
I think Temple of Doom was the thing that didn't inspire it, but that was one of the linchpins of them doing it. Like,
gotcha. Okay.
That's my memory. I could be wrong on that, but I think it was that and Gremlins was like, oh, you guys, we got to have a new rating.
We need another. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's funny that Spielberg,
we're going down a dangerous path.
Spielberg was involved in all three of these things. That's kind of funny. In this one, barely, because it's just his friend is this director, but.
Yeah,
that's kind of funny.
I used to roommate.
Spielberg owned the 80s, man. That guy.
He really did.
He really did. But you don't think about it then. Like at the time, I didn't think about it so much. But now I look back and I'm like, everything was yours, man. The whole decade. Mm-hmm. E.T., we just learned this on TMS the other day. E.T. was the top grossing film of the entire decade.
Mm-hmm.
Like beat Star Wars, beat Indiana Jones, which was also his.
Right.
It's just crazy to me how much he did.
I really hate we didn't get to experience an elder Patrick Swayze. I would really have been interested to see.
What he'd be doing now? Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So interesting. Like, imagine older Patrick Swayze in a movie like Hell or High Water.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Or some kind of grisly. Even any Western or something. I would be all up in that. It really bums me out. So he had pancreatic cancer. So did Powers Booth, the exact same
kind
of cancer. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, obviously died much later in his life than Patrick did, but just a bummer, man. Yeah. Patrick Swayze did not deserve that.
What if they ate like the same cancerous shrimp at a party? Like a
rat left right off the craft table at the making of Red Dawn.
Could have been. When they both drank that deer blood. Oh, wait, that was the other kid. Never mind.
Yeah, since the foreshadowing was so heavy-handed, I really expected somebody to drink somebody's blood. I really was expecting that to go.
Instead,
to
you just got level. Deer blood. Here's the thing. This movie, I was 100% sure, even after 15 viewings, that somebody sometime barfed in this movie. No one ever barfed.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Well, I honestly was thinking that C. Thomas Howell was going to puke right after drinking that deer blood. They were setting it up like, oh, yeah, it's really good. Yeah, it's really good. Oh, this is good.
Yeah, it's like, no, it's warm and salty and the worst thing in your mouth and barf. Right. I swear I remember somebody barfing, but I didn't.
He likes it.
Yeah. I found the least believable IMDb fact. Okay.
So okay. Give it.
This is no way this is true, but whatever. It says
producers were considering Arnold Schwarzenegger and Harrison Ford for the roles of Jen and
those are always in there too. This probably had that too, and I just skipped over it. But anyway, it says two CIA men came to the set. I love that you call them CIA men.
CIA men.
Came to the set having received reports of Russian tanks in the area. They were relieved to hear the tanks were just for a movie.
Yeah.
Come on.
That. Sure. That sounds fake.
I don't know. CIA men is the official term for those people.
Yeah, the CIA men coming to... just imagine...
What's your dad do? Oh, he's the CIA man.
Just imagine the top intelligence organization in the world, and they're like... Hey, Phil, you see that? There's some tanks there. I hope this isn't real. Come on. That's horseshit.
I enjoyed the tanks. I enjoyed the tank babbles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I thought it was very well done. It did make me stop and think, how'd they get these tanks to Colorado? I don't know what was the mechanism by which these very, very heavy machines
were taken
to this little town. And they're not even in the little town. These tanks are out in the desert.
Well,
right?
That's a Vegas shot. So all the tank stuff I read is most of this was filmed in North Vegas, and then a whole bunch of it was filmed in actual Colorado, right?
Not Vegas though. Las Vegas, New Mexico. New Mexico.
Oh, yeah. I misunderstood that. I didn't know there was a Las Vegas.
That's
New Mexico.
A crappy Vegas.
Yeah. Okay.
And I want to be clear, Scott. I wasn't asking. How did the filmmakers get these tanks out here? I was asking, how did the invaders
did the
get these tanks out here?
Oh, I see what you mean. Like, okay, I got you.
That was a little off.
It was weird.
They come in IKEA flat packs, and you just assemble them. You get them shipped out there, and then you just put them together. Yeah,
is there a little amorphous?
The name on the side is Boomston.
Yeah, Boomston.
And there's a little instruction manual that's got two guys shrugging their shoulders.
Yeah, two little amorphous guys, little naked blobby-looking guys going on. Yeah, I don't know.
I found it odd, too. I didn't dig too deep into it because I just didn't want to. But I wasn't sure about the plan to invade Colorado is your starting point.
And not even near NORAD. Like you think if you're going to pick a place that's going to be like, okay, where's NORAD? Let's go there.
Like a weird choice, but maybe I just didn't dig deep enough into what the plan was. But it seemed like it made more sense for them to come to, because didn't they say Mexico was like in turmoil and a civil war? I mean, like, seems like it would be easier to creep up through that way.
Yeah, I always thought it was Texas, and in fact, until this 15th viewing, I still thought it was Texas. Yeah. I thought it was a small Texas town.
For some reason, that football small town vibe made me feel like it was Texas. Not I remember them going to Colorado, but I thought they started in Texas and just over months' times worked their way up to Colorado.
So the Powers Booth character is supposed to explain this to you, and it doesn't go very well because he's mumbling in the middle of the night. Yeah. And it basically. Yes, so the communist invasion has been coming up from South America, where it got its foothold in the Americas, like years and years ago, right? And it's been coming up, and communism overthrew Mexico, and then built a great big army, and then invaded the states. And the reason this movie is taking place in Colorado is because that invasion over the border with Mexico was full-scale freaking war. Like war. And so you wouldn't have wanted to put this too close to the border, or it would have just been, you know, a bunch of disasters.
That makes sense.
Explosion.
Yeah, they did kind of address that a little bit, because that's what happened when they were doing the big tank battle. He took them down to the actual line, right, where things were really happening.
It was so he's an interesting character because he brings context to the larger conflict so that they're not, you know, just up in their mountain retreat and away from everything and not really know what's going on. I just never really bought him as this grizzled serviceman. I don't know why. Right. I just didn't. Mm-hmm. It just didn't work for me. I don't know who would have been better at the time, but it never worked for me. He was meant to play villains. He's supposed to be Curly Bill. He's mm-hmm. supposed to be.
Yeah, I did keep waiting for him to turn. Like right. that was one of the things I said. Right. I had remembered there was some kind of betrayal in the movie, but it, you know, it's been probably like 10 years since I've watched it last, and I couldn't remember. I'm like, was it Powers Booth that was the traitor? Well, somebody was yeah, a traitor.
And nowadays, the Game of Thronesification of this is Powers Booth's character would eventually force himself on Leah Thompson in the middle of the night.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And then they would all hate him, but then he would get redemption by saving them from a tank when they needed it most.
Right.
And I realized, man, I've seen too much since this movie came out. You know?
Yes.
Like I can't take it at face value because I'm like, well, Powers Booth would have been an interesting character if he'd been more rapey. Am I saying that? No, God no.
Right, but yeah, I mean, it does feel like his character's a little two dimensional. Like he's the World War II fighter that lands on Gilligan's Island and yeah. almost helps him get off the island for a few minutes.
I think we are. This is Gilligan's Island, very close.
Yeah, Gilligan's Island, Lord of the Flies.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's great. I always, even as a kid, hated that thing they would do on Gilligan's Island where somebody like that would show up. I hated that. And you're right. That's kind of what this mm-hmm. is. It's not that it absolutely could have been done better, but whatever.
You know what I hated about Gilligan's Island episodes? Always the one where they were actively trying to get off the island. Those pissed me off because I knew there was no way they were getting off. So don't give me hope.
Oh, they're just wasting your time. Yeah, I get that. Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's just deal with weird coconut technology. That's what I'm here for.
Yeah. That's yeah. a weird coconut. Yeah. How are you going to make a record player play? And what will Mr. Howell do to keep his money hidden?
You know, right.
All you have to do is fix a hole in the side of the boat, but you can, you know.
Right.
Occasionally the old comedian kind of joke. You can fix you can make a radio out of a coconut, but you can't fix a hole in the side of the boat.
Yeah. Right. That show's dumb. Let's just
bring me some gorillas with, you know, some kind of enhanced intelligence to the island yeah. and have them run around. That's what I want.
My favorite
gorillas,
my
GUE or gorillas GO.
They were GOs.
Yeah, GOs. GOs. Yeah. I don't want
dudes in suits, in sweaty, hairy right. suits. That's what right. that was. And also the one where they got the radiated vegetables that showed up in a box and yeah. everybody yeah. got like
the superpower episode.
Yes, I love yeah. freaking. I thought that was great. Yeah. All right, so here's I just wanted to give the full skinny on the PG-13 thing. So the first motion picture released with a PG-13 rating from the MPAA. However, and this is August 10th, 1984, The Flamingo Kid technically is the first film to get a PG-13 rating, but it sat on
no
shelves
one's ever
for
heard
five
of it except for us.
It was on shelves for it was shelved. Dylan. It was shelved right. for 5 months before they put it out. So it got the rating first, but it released in theaters late. So right.
I'm going to say that doesn't count.
Yeah.
And what's
yeah.
funny is The Flamingo Kid, that's a movie for me that only exists because HBO showed it every day at 2 a.m.
True story.
Yeah. That's the only
same,
way it
same,
exists.
Same experience.
Yeah, you're probably not wrong. I'm trying to think if I ever saw it in any other form.
I had never heard of it until just now, and I'm shocked to find out it's a Gary Marshall film.
Oh, yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah.
I know it's Matt Dillon, right?
Yep.
And yeah. lead. Yeah,
he's like a cabana
future,
boy.
Future film sack, probably.
Probably. Yeah. It's not good.
Like Gary Marshall, who made his bones writing Happy Days and later made the movie Pretty Woman, mm-hmm. also made this Flamingo Kid thing.
Yeah,
right.
You've
and
never
apparently
seen
there's
that.
A
That's
there's
crazy.
A musical out now, so don't forget to run out and see the Flamingo Kid musical. This,
Shut up. Really?
Yeah.
Really?
That's yeah, a thing. Okay.
With Nathan Lane as the Flamingo Kid.
Oh my God. Hey, look. I like Nathan Lane. You're talking my language. Yeah. Let's see. Let's see how that goes. So you guys are right about the Colorado thing. I didn't know there was a Las Vegas, New Mexico. I feel like an idiot. I had no idea.
Oh,
It's not a memorable Las Vegas, so it's understandable.
Okay, fair enough.
We flew right past a really, really important trope.
What's
like
that?
Trope that goes back to the beginning of film set.
Oh my gosh, let me play it. Is there a glaive in this? There's a glaive?
The black guy that dies first?
Trope.
Yes, black guy dies first.
Oh, the teacher.
Right,
Mr.
Right.
Teasdale is the literal black guy that dies first. Why does this movie
oh my gosh.
Kill the only black guy in the very first scene?
The only black guy in all of Colorado in 1984 dies first. Right. Wow.
I want to say my soul died first, but I'm going to give it a close
yeah,
second.
No, I think you're that is the epitome of the trope. Like that's prime example exhibit A, man.
And I gotta say, I tried not to dig too deep because this is 1984, but kind of an expectation of I'm not gonna have a lot of black actors in this film. Were there any other black actors after that?
No. I didn't spot one. No, and I've been keeping track. Like the most recent for us was Heat. In Heat, Dennis Haysbert died first.
Yep.
Going back. The Island. When we watched The Island, you might recall there's a black guy who dies first. Yeah. Like it's something that I've been watching for. I didn't see another black guy in the whole movie.
Oh yeah, no.
In the mountains, there's a cave that looks like a vagina too.
Oh yeah, guaranteed.
Oh, is there?
Yeah.
It has to be. I didn't see one, but there has to be.
It, but you were okay.
No. No. He just knew it was there.
The special edition.
I can feel it.
I can feel it. There was a vagina near me.
Exactly. It's
burning.
Feel it in my bones.
The movie was originally the original title of the script, by the way, was Teen Soldiers. How dumb is that?
Teen Soldiers. Yeah.
That's pretty dumb.
Horrible.
Yeah, but is it any worse than what was the other one? Not Small Soldiers. That was the one we watched with the what was the other movie where there were
ten. There's the one with the toys.
Not Small Soldiers. That's the toys one. What's the other one? Because there was one where a school got invaded.
Tinker, Tyler, Tippy.
No. This is old. This is an older movie.
Got
invaded.
Yeah. What was it?
On this show, we've covered it
by some terrorist. Oh, what was it? Not Small Soldiers. What was it? Teen Soldiers.
Oh. Wait, not the one with John Stewart getting a pencil in the eye.
No.
Faculty. No, that's a different thing.
You're
talking about by soldiers, not by aliens.
Small soldiers.
Now, why don't you say that? Stop saying
it. It doesn't sound right. It's
because it's not right.
It's not right.
Toy soldiers.
Toy soldiers is not about toys. It's about It's about Samwise Gamgee.
Hold on. Toy soldiers.
But is it a school getting invaded?
By some military. Yeah.
By the way, I love to put the movie Toy Soldiers into the same universe as Stranger Things season 2. So the Sean Astin character from Toy Soldiers grows up to be the Sean Astin character in Stranger Things.
I didn't know Sean Astin was in Stranger Things. I haven't seen season
2. Oh, he's great. That's actually the only reason to watch season 2.
I love Steven Slyker.
Yeah, no, we just had this conversation, you and I. I haven't seen it
yet.
We
did. Yeah. I know, we talked about this with Steven Schleicher, and he said, even season 4 of Stranger Things is better than season 2, and there isn't a season 4 of Stranger Things.
I respect his feelings on the
now
season.
That you bring up Sean Astin, Sean Astin is the best thing about season 2, and the only reason to watch season 2.
People say...
I also want to credit the random other gang of misfits that Eleven goes and encounters in the city, because that's a really awesome part of season 2.
Yeah, that's how she gets her. That's how she gets her training. Yeah.
That's right. Guys,
I'm sorry. I'm gonna make a case for season 2 of Stranger Things.
Yeah.
It's actually got some points that are so entertaining. Paul Reiser is so entertaining every time he's on the screen.
Paul Reiser.
I agree. It's the weakest of the seasons. However, even the weakest season is still worth watching.
Did you say Paul Reiser?
I forgot about the other misfits too.
Hold on, you're telling me Paul Reiser's in that movie?
Yes.
Oh my gosh! All right, I'm gonna watch it then. Are you kidding me?
Steven has lied to you.
Okay, take that, Schleicher. He listens to the show. He'll hear this. He'll know. By the way, that movie you were talking about, the Toy Soldiers, is Sean Astin,
Will Wheaton,
and R. Lee Ermey is in that there.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
they stack Sean Astin that high.
I've added it to our film sack if it ever comes around list. We will watch.
Okay. And good luck, because if you Google Toy Soldiers movie, all you will see is Small Soldiers. That's having so much trouble.
It's basically like Google operates in Brian Dunaway's mind.
Yep.
Stop it.
Never
heard
of
this.
Are you
sure you didn't mean Small Soldiers?
I'm broken.
I have no memory of this, by the way. I just don't even know what it is. He wrote Big. He wrote The Big Easy. He wrote Turner and Hooch. Like, that guy's a big writer, but he only directed a couple movies, and this is one of them. Anyway.
I'm really excited to say I'm removing a film from our must-see list because it is in our next upcoming list. Oh. So that's exciting.
Yeah. Which?
Our must-house.
You want to tell us at the end? Oh, okay, cool.
And And looking at our must-see list, I just want to share with some people listening, like some of these movies, we're going to must-see Gremlins 2 if we ever get to.
Yes!
Heavy Metal is on that list. Arrival, we've talked about so many times.
Didn't we get rays of Heavy Metal from some listener?
Maybe. Did we?
Maybe.
Now I'm having a memory of that as well.
And then, most importantly, the film I look for almost on a weekly basis is Twister. If we ever have a way to watch Twister, we are so watching it, guys.
Oh, you kidding me? I'd watch Twister.
I want us to watch it together, though. That's like we should all.
Yes. Yeah, we haven't done a full length movie commentary track in a long time. That would be a great one.
That would be a fun one.
Actually, Gremlins 2, like any of these that we've just talked about, Gremlins 2, Twister, or Heavy Metal. All three of those would be fantastic Twister, live commentary.
Yeah, exactly. Twister has is very sparse on dialogue and a lot of things to visually see. So I think it'd be great.
All those should be on that list of potentials and I would watch them all. Yeah, I love Twister. You don't have to beg me to watch that. I love that movie.
You don't have to twist my arm to watch Twister.
I see what you did there. Yeah, see
Twister. Twister taught me the three ways to survive a tornado, and I really, really appreciate
Hold on
that.
To Helen Hunt tightly.
Uh-huh.
Right.
So the three ways are you go in a hole that has a secure door. That's number one. Number two is you strap yourself to something that's firmly rooted in the ground, and that's
Helen Hunt.
Like, yeah. But then number three is the best, which is just outdrive the tornado.
I love
that. As like everyone, just get in your car and go.
Yeah, but have Philip Seymour Hoffman drive. He's the best driver.
I gotta go back to that first one you had with the secure door, but with a little asterisk that says, but don't hold on to the door because you'll get sucked out.
Yeah,
right.
And this
right.
is that guy directed Speed, something LeBlanc.
Gus Van Zandt. Oh yeah, right. No, it's yeah.
Jan LeBlanc.
Jan LeBlanc.
Vaunt. I don't know what it is.
I saw Twister at the THX theater with a pregnant friend's. She was pregnant. My friend's wife was pregnant. Oh my god!
Wow, where's this going? But I love this. Keep going.
I know, right? So yeah, so I went with my friend to see Twister, and he brought his pregnant wife. And oh my god, I'm pretty sure that kid got messed up.
Just a little stressed out. Yeah, I get that.
Oh my gosh, guys. Yeah. Sony Dynamic Digital Sound was so important.
Oh, it was huge, man.
Would drive an extra 40 miles to the theater that had the SDDS system.
I want to hear this.
Hey, by the way, I have a theory that Patrick Swayze's character committed suicide in this movie, and I'll tell you why. Because when he came around the corner and went, you lose. And he comes out of that barrel and stands up straight, full target, to a guy who's got a automatic weapon and his full magazine, freaking AK-47, and stands up with his little pee-pee pistol and says,
"You lose." It was a suicide by cop thing, right? Yeah, I agree with you on that.
If it says you lose, of course he's now going to get shot, and that's going to be the end of Swayze. Like, what are you doing? That annoyed me. Like,
well,
you're supposed
to be
this
awesome.
Well,
they did that as well. Which character was it? Daryl? Was it Daryl? No, he was the traitor.
Yeah, Daryl was the Pontius Pilate of this thing.
Right. Well, it must have been Robert. Or not Robert Pontius C. Pilate. Thomas Howell. He was the one that he just stepped out from behind a rock and went face to face with some helicopters.
Yeah. Who was that? Sorry. Who was the one that turned on Jesus, took all the gold? What's his name? Help me. Help me with this.
Which one?
The guy that turned on Jesus and took the gold. The turncoat.
Pontius Pilate?
Pilate's the guy that washed his hands of the whole thing.
Oh, right.
I thought you were talking in the context of Red Dawn.
Judas. So just Daryl guy was Judas in this movie is all I was trying to say, or whatever his name was. But
Judas Priest.
Judas Priest. Breaking the law, breaking the law, breaking the law.
Breaking the law.
All right. Any other thoughts? So none of us have seen the Hemsworth remake, right? I feel like
I did.
Okay. I've not seen it.
I liked it.
I kind of want to now just to see what they did.
Yeah. If you want to see what it would look like if someone was able to actually get the shots that was needed, that would be the new one. Now, is it got great dialogue? No. Has it got great acting? It's okay. But the actually getting the full sense of what's going on, it feels like a much more complete film.
Very low score everywhere it is that there are scores.
Yeah, it's not great. It's just, I think it's good.
Let's see. And I assume he plays Oh, is Jeffrey Dean Morgan is the fallen soldier guy that they find instead of Powers Booth.
They got some great actors. Got him and what is the kid, and he's his brother
Josh Hutcherson.
He lost a lot of weight for this.
Adrian Palicki's in this, so she's one of the girls.
I like Adrian Palicki.
I do too, a lot. She's awesome. Let's see, is there
You still haven't watched much of the Orville, have you, Scott?
I have seen
all of season one. You haven't watched season two.
I've watched all of episode one of the Orville.
That's what it is. I knew it was something. It was all you've caught up on Discovery, but not on Orville.
Yeah, I keep saying I'm going to do it. I just
do it.
I know. I got.
You still have CBS All Access?
No, but I can get it. And then we have friends. It's all good. I could get it. Mm-hmm. I'm not worried about that so much. Anyway, we should watch that just because if it's as shitty as everyone says it is or not, and B,
Red Dawn the remake,
and then just let's just see if it's.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of overacting. Anytime you have this content, this subject matter it's going to be fodder for fun.
Yeah.
Right?
Who's this kid? That's not Josh Hutcherson. There's some people in here I recognize that I don't know who they are. Anyway, I would watch this for the show if we ever can find it. And people say it's a parody at best. Oh, these reviews are brutal, dude.
Yeah. I think it suffered from remake expectations. I think people didn't realize in 2012 how bad the 1984 movie might have been. I don't know. I don't know.
It's
not fun.
I'm willing to admit this for a movie that I consider to be one of my favorite 80s movies. It's not great. It has big problems. I just think that there's something there that could be done right. So let's maybe try it again. Randy's idea of an HBO series or something is a good one.
That is a great idea.
So get in there, make that happen. All right,
I think you said it pretty good at the top of the show, Scott. I mean, it meant something to us, but it'd be hard to sell this exact idea to kids today, even though they do know also that fear of having to go to war, especially if it's on your own front door.
It was definitely unique thing. Like the Cold War in the 80s was absolutely unique pastiche to work with for movies.
So the director John Milius, he also did he wrote the story for Homefront,
the video game. Really?
Yeah, the video game. So I thought whenever I was playing Homefront that it had that Red Dawn kind of vibe to
that's
it.
That's the whole thing with Homefront. It's an invasion.
Yeah,
it's an invasion in America soil again. That's the same idea. That's interesting. That's actually the best part of that game. It doesn't play great, but the story's really good.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So again, maybe that's the best way to bring it into a modern society.
That's the best way to use that guy. His stories are great. His execution is terrible.
Terrible crap.
Yep. All right. Let's do some clips. I don't have a ton, but I have enough. And cool. They begin with this one. Oh, we already heard it, but I'll play it again.
You're such a goddamn jock.
This is at the beginning of the thing. Teenagers working out their class structure issues. Here's a great line. It's very important stuff happening here. This is Swayze talking to, one of the kids. Here you go.
We can fish. We can stay up here a long, long time. Okay?
How long, Jet?
Until we don't hear that no more.
Good job.
There's a lot of boring dialogue in this movie. I had to spruce it up a little.
I did drum it up a little bit. Perfect.
Here's Stanton, who's been dead for a year now? That guy?
Yeah.
He's great, man. He's the best actor in the movie, except for when he yelled, "Avenge me."
That's part of his acting.
But I totally bought his whole dad thing and talking through the fence, and that stuff was good. Their reaction was kind of bad.
You totally believe that he was talking through a fence. Yeah. I'm totally with you on that.
It was almost like there was a real fence there. It's so weird. Here's him yelling his dumb line.
Boys! Avenge me! Avenge me!
Come on.
That's my favorite.
You're hanging on the drive-in. You're fine. You're getting to watch movies for free.
Yep, that's right.
I think he ad-libbed that part.
Think so?
Yeah, I think he was like, he had read the dialogue, and I think he was supposed to walk off, and he's like, let's just see if I can get an extra scene in here.
Yeah,
sounds about right. Here's Marty's.
Let me explore this a little bit. Let me play with this. Give me a chance here.
Yeah. Here's Marty's mom going after Charlie Sheen. All right, so here you go.
Why don't you make yourself useful?
You wash it. You're never doing your washing again. Me and hers as good as any of you.
So what's up your ass?
Shut up!
She's freaking... Don't mess with her, dude.
Damn, you mean to tell you what's up my butt? We've been pooping in the woods for a month. I got sticks all up in there.
Something must be up her ass to be that upset about getting accused of something up your ass.
Scary part is that Charlie Sheen would these days would really like to know what's up your ass. He would like to know. Yes, Brian?
It was up your ass, and can I get some?
Can I get some of that? Yeah.
It was straight up angry acting.
Yeah.
But it was good.
Yeah.
I liked it.
She's good. Yeah. I think she's one of the stronger points in the movie.
Yeah.
She's very good. Here's this isolated.
So what's up your ass?
And just use that whenever I feel like it. It's pretty good. All right, here's that famous line.
Wolverines!
Wolverines yelling that.
They were tagging that everywhere.
Yeah, they were into it.
With like the graffiti style, like, you know, the weird little zigzaggy on the E's and stuff like that. It's like, wow, these kids for you know, out in the mountains, boonies, they know the urban street tagging look.
Yeah.
Right. So did you guys know the context? Because a lot of people... Not a lot of people. A lot of people in my circles during the 80s, we would often, that would be your battle cry if you were supposed to do something crazy. So did you guys ever hear anybody say that? Not seeing the movie?
Did you know the context?
Yeah. Like, did you know the context by which? No. Okay.
No, because we're growing up, hold my beer.
We do the we do that all the time. Like somebody, dumb friend would jump off the overpass or into some trees or something, and he'd yell Wolverine before he did it. Yeah. Huh. That was just a thing. I mean, that movie, I don't know, maybe it was more, it feels like if people saw it, then they saw it a lot. And if you didn't see it, you just didn't. I don't know. There was no one.
It was kind of like The Breakfast Club.
Yeah.
You watch that movie many, many times.
Or not at all. That one's weird because it still works. Like, you can show it to your 15-year-old now, and they're like, they totally relate to it. It's crazy. All right, here's some yelling time, so enjoy this.
Shoot him! What is this thing?
What is it? Who's coming after us? Where are they?
Oh my gosh, guys.
There's so much angry acting there. Wow.
Yeah.
Why am I yelling?
I'd be giving up all the information right about then. What do you want to know?
Yeah. Was it the other, was it the Russian guy? That's who they're yelling at? Okay.
They captured the...
Yeah,
and the Cuban.
He does his thing where he pisses them off till they're about to shoot him, and then he sits up straight and starts rattling off his freaking.
We already know your name.
Yeah,
or we don't care about your name.
Name, rank, and serial number.
Yeah,
Which was kind of like the prisoners in front of the firing squad all singing some patriotic song.
Oh, the worst version of America the Beautiful I've ever heard in my life.
And because the guy who starts it too high.
Yeah.
You start it so high that no one can get to the register when the song goes higher. Like, come on, man.
Yeah, we should probably clear up a misconception. We got a bunch of stuff on Twitter last night saying that Henry Dean Stanton's character was the chick in the bucket.
Harry.
Henry. Harry Dean Stanton was the chick in the bucket, but he actually wasn't. He was shot at the singing. He just wasn't singing. Yeah. And people on the
internet standing there like, I don't know the words to this song. Avenge me!
Avenge me. It's the only words he knows. Poor guy. All right, here's Swayze making a bird noise. Pretty good.
Yeah, it was really good.
I wanted him to use that noise to call for other things.
Yeah, I agree.
Like a Grubhub or something.
Yeah, exactly. Scott, you need to just keep playing it. Is it called Grubhub?
Yeah. I'll see any DoorDash.
Call his mom every Sunday.
Hey, we need Uber.
So that was.
What
I think, Brian? That was one of the most unbelievable scenes to me, that they were so smart in everything they did, but then some vegetables fall off the back of the truck and they're like, looks right, let's go.
I mean, as soon as I saw it, I went, you guys, it's a trap. Really? You dipshits.
Silly trap. Mm-hmm. But I get it, maybe hunger makes you do stupid things, and it had to happen to, you know, I don't know, it was just a little bit annoying.
And that helicopter
was a lot bit annoying.
That helicopter is crazy, man. That thing was nuts.
Yeah.
It looked good, too.
Yeah.
Scary.
I expected a freaking Airwolf theme to kick in.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Like, when they get attacked by helicopters, so this is 1984, they would have been only operating at night.
Mm.
That's a thing. Like, this guerrilla band of teenagers would have only been operating at night, and that way they could not get ambushed, or at least... If they got ambushed, it would be really freaking amazing that someone figured out where they were in darkness.
Right.
And it's just dumb. Like, Why are they working during the day? They should know better.
Yeah. Dumb is the word that I would use. Here's okay. Here's a question. Did this movie or did Empire Strikes Back say this better? Here you go.
I love you, Maddie. I know.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll give it to Star Wars, I think.
Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah. All right, how about this? Oh, I wrote, okay, this is 17 seconds long. I wrote, this still kind of works for me, but I don't remember what it is. So let's see if it truly does work for me. Here we go.
In the early days of World War III, guerrillas, mostly children, placed the names of their lost upon this rock. They fought here alone and gave up their lives so that this nation shall not perish from the earth.
I think it's because I think she's just really good in this. I think that works for me still.
Like, what, it, did they put Daryl's name on there because he swallowed that the bug that led them?
I don't know. Not what did they Daryl's do Daryl? Name yeah, Daryl's not going to be on this. And I'm not carving his name in this rock either, you guys. He's a dick.
How many times do I have to tell you when you're giving a presentation, don't put the words you're saying on the screen? Why would you just read to me what I can read for myself?
Yeah, but she was good at narrating that. That was good.
No.
I liked it.
It's horrible.
I liked it. It was fine. It's not the best thing, but she's just good in this. I think she deserves some credit because I think she's a little one note in almost everything else she does. In this, I think she's got range. So there you go. Of course, here's all I know of her career. Okay, this is sad. I know this. I know
Back to the Future.
And then Caroline in the City.
Howard the Duck and Caroline in the City. Those are it.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
That's the run. And she's very funny to follow on Twitter, by the way. She's a good follow.
Mm-hmm. How is she?
Yeah, it's very nice.
There's a great tweet of her with Biff.
Oh,
a year ago, a few months ago, where the two of them are
hanging out. Yeah. I expected, what's his name, to pull him over and get your damn hands off her or something. Really finish it up.
Yeah.
What's his name? I can't think of his
Crispin,
name.
Crispin Glover.
Crispin Glover. Yeah.
Get your damn hands off my wife.
You think I really ought to swear?
Did y'all ever see, was it Willard or something like that? One where he was in when he was like the rat?
Oh, yeah, I never saw that.
The Ben or Willard, right. That's another class, you know, another one that's perfect.
Have you guys seen Reuben and Ed before? You ever seen Reuben and Ed?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so no, but, that's him.
River's Edge is one that we need.
Yeah, that one's also really good. But Reuben and Ed, let me tell you a quick thing here. So Reuben and Ed is him. And Howard, oh, I forgot his name. He was on, he was Johnny Fever. Howard Hessman.
Yeah.
So Howard Hessman and Crispin Glover, which sounds like a crazy combo anyway, are on a road trip in the Utah desert trying to find a place to bury his cat. Reuben and Ed. It's an awesome, weird, freaking movie, and it's folklore here because it's a local filmmaker and everyone just worships this dude, and it's the weirdest freaking movie.
I feel like I've seen this.
You should totally see it if you haven't.
Crispin Glover feels like he's exactly like you think he'd be in real life.
Yeah.
Just as, and just we just saw him in something. Much. What did I just see him in? Is it a TV show? Let's see here. Oh, yeah, American Gods. That's right. In season two of American Gods.
Oh, what's his deal in there? Who's he?
He's the big bad. He's Mr. World.
Oh. Oh, all right. Too bad that season's so dumb.
Exactly. Yes. I don't even know if I'd say it's worth seeing it just for him.
Because he is.
I'd watch Good Omens instead.
Because he is cool looking now. Right? Like he is a cool looking dude. He's held up.
But I feel like, he's just as nuts in real life as all the characters he plays.
That dude's pushing 60 and he just looks cool. Anyway.
I'm sad that we got through clips without some good Spanish-Russian.
Yeah, I didn't do any of that.
The Spanish-Russian in this movie was what really stood out to me. And again, I haven't seen it a bunch of times like you have.
Right.
But man, every time someone was trying to speak Russian with a Spanish accent or trying to speak Spanish with a... I don't know what kind of accent. I was just enthralled.
Yeah. It was a weird, some weird combos going on there.
Do they, there's some stuff like I was wondering if there were like direct translations. I was curious about that. I'm sure somebody knows a lot better than we do. But like when they're firing squad, we say firing squad, but would they say fuego? Because that means fire. Right. But I don't think they would say fire. It's a direct translation.
Pull the trigger. It means flame.
It means hot. It doesn't mean it's hot. Like you go, ooh, this egg is fuego. Like it's a hot egg.
I wasn't.
Well, yeah. That particular actor was saying fuego. Like he was a English speaker who was trying to perform a word.
Put them in front of the fuegoing squad.
I turned on subtitles and I did it pretty early because I can't understand Patrick Swayze.
Yeah.
He just. Seriously, his accent is the weirdest muddled thing. I have never understood.
Is that across the board? You can't watch like, you know, I don't know.
Dirty Dancing or something.
Well, no, I mean, you learn to understand him, but it's just a strange accent. Like I'm looking here. It says he's from Houston, Texas. His accent isn't, I don't know where it's from.
Well, he's a sexy man. With a weird forehead.
Listen, you want to get out of here? You can get out of here. We don't need you. Go on. Get out of here.
That's pretty good. That's a little McConaughey, but that's good.
A little McConaughey, yeah.
Which I think is from the same area, isn't he? Something like that.
I think he's Louisiana or something, isn't he?
I thought he was a Texas boy. Do I have that wrong?
Maybe he's Texas. He could be Texas.
I felt like you were just doing a scene where a kid has to run off his dog to save the dog.
Right, like Old Yeller. That is what I was doing.
Patrick Swayze, an Old Yeller.
Oh my gosh.
For me, the kid having to run off the dog for its own good is the saddest thing that you could ever commit to film.
It is sad.
Go on.
No one wants to tell their dog. Oh, I hate that. They did it in Game of Thrones, even. They had Arya's wolf had to get kicked out. She had to yell at it. Oh, I hate that. Don't yell at your own animal. Keep them.
Dogs don't understand.
No.
What? My owner doesn't love me anymore?
I think all they think is food.
Ooh, there must be food that way.
There must be food. I'm going to go get food. Why are you yelling at me? Okay, food. All right. Hey, look where we are now. It's the Film Sack Checklist. Russians are dumb. Check. Who's going to pay for all the rocks you carved your name into? Check. It's not really a check, but it's more of a question. And then finally, never-ending bag of mystery ammo and rockets available anytime you need it? Check. Star Trek Connection, we got one. Roy Jensen played Mr. Morris in TOS, the original series, played Cloud Williams in the episode The Omega Glory. This is that 4th of July one. Yeah. Do you remember that one where he reads the Constitution to Kirk? Remember that? That's the thing. It's not good. It's very bad and not very memorable. Soundtrack great. I give it a PG for pretty good for the time, especially with the orchestrated stuff. I thought that stuff worked pretty good. They got a little synthy in the middle, which was weird. Don't know what that was about.
Synthy in the middle. Tune in for TMS Monday for Synthy in the middle.
Synthy in the middle.
I felt like Basil Poledouris is, I realize now, just kind of does the same thing in every movie.
Yeah.
I feel like this is sort of more of the same as he did in other things. Like we saw Basil Poledouris movies like RoboCop, Conan, Starship Troopers. They all just kind of have the same score.
Yeah. Well, he's been around for a while. Look at that guy's career.
Yeah.
Huh. It's pretty boilerplate, but it worked. It was fine. Looky here. The Twitter post. This is where you guys sum it up in 280 characters or less. The tradition says we must start with Randy. Randy, take it away.
Red Dawn. A Freddie Mercury lookalike comes to town and starts threatening people, and all the kids all just leave because they hate that Brit pop rock crap. And one of two submit reply. They hate it so much that they can't even live here anymore with your stupid rules and your death squads. Ugh, I'm just going to go live in the woods with my friends. No, you shut up. Two of two.
Oh, good job extending.
Not what I expected.
Not at all. The Dunaway.
Red Dawn. Hey, don't cry. Let it turn to something else. Just like a Saturday night at Ibbot's house.
Nice. You got one in. Well done. Brian Ibbot.
Red Dawn. I watched this movie for you. For you, Film Sack listeners, stop your crying. Avenge me! Avenge me! Just like a Saturday night at my house.
I like it. Randy, you've been usurped. Wow. You've been usurped.
No, I've been tributed.
Yeah, that's true.
That's right, exactly. Homaged.
One man's usurpage is another.
You've been homaged.
Here's this then. just been handed these alternate titles. It was almost called Dirty Grenade Dancing. Mm. Or That Time Marty's Mom Was Hot for Curly Bill.
Wow.
It's a little wordy. It's a little wordy. Yeah. But, you know, you can see why they didn't go with it. I can tell you this, though. Emails are fun. I got two of them. These are from listeners. This first one here is from Michael, who says this. I just listened to the Olympus Has Fallen episode, and I had to email. Since it appears Brian wasn't paying any attention as he didn't realize Charles Manson is in it, I wanted him to know. Oh, he's talking about the, sorry.
Yeah, the trailer for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yes, so he must be calling you. I was thinking it was Dunaway, but he's calling you out.
No, he's calling me out.
He says, I wanted him to know this. The Asian guy doing kung fu is supposed to be Bruce Lee. Anyway.
Oh, okay. Thank you for that. Listen, yeah. You watch that trailer, and the first 5 minutes of the first 5 minutes of the trailer, not really, it's only 5 minutes long, is them talking about doing stunts and how Leonardo DiCaprio is the movie star and that Brad Pitt is his stunt guy. And then they do this like big flash of all these other things. And they end with DiCaprio like, oh, that's the best compliment I've ever gotten on my acting. In the middle of those little micro flashes is a Charles Manson thing. I can be forgiven for missing that little flash of Charles Manson.
I have to agree with
you. Didn't watch the trailer breakdown?
You know what? I only know this. Here's the thing. Had I only seen the trailer, mm-hmm. I would be exactly where you're at. If I hadn't seen, here's the only reason I knew any of this is like 2 years ago when the project was announced and it was rumored who was going to be in it. It mm-hmm. says, and it's rumored to take place during the Sharon Tate murders and deal with that's the only reason I even knew.
So
yeah. Michael,
Brian wasn't paying attention. <Boo-ba-doo-ba-doo. laughs>
I'm taking the emailer side. Yeah, Ibbit.
I'll take it from you, Dunaway.
Yeah,
that's right.
Your email.
Give me this guy's email address. I'm going to email him right now.
Dunham. So that's Team Dunamail or Dunham.
Yeah, Dunamail. I like Dunham, that. Yeah.
Dunamail. Email away.
Team mail away. Yeah, Team Mail Away. I like it. All right. Here's one more from Chris who wrote in. Says, hello, Scott, Brian, and Randy. I have been a listener for many years, and I've listened to the first episode all the way through twice. You guys are a joy to listen to and often make me laugh out loud at my desk. Many curious looks from my coworkers. After listening to the latest one about Olympus Has Fallen, you mentioned that you will be viewing the next one on Amazon Prime. That would be today. Mm-hmm. I've been waiting patiently for the worst movie ever to appear on Netflix to no avail. My wife recently got us Amazon Prime, and I was overjoyed to see it there. So now I can finally ask you to sack it. Movie in question is Leviathan from 1989, starring and loosely used Peter Weller, Richard Crenna, and Amanda Pays. Right. I like Peter Weller. Upper Murphy. It says, my wife and I use this pile of crap as the measurement of how bad a movie can be. I would really like to hear what you guys have to say about it. Spark plug received. Regards, Chris. Sure. Why isn't Leviathan should always be on our list. It probably
is.
It's probably on there. Right, yeah. Randy? It's probably
and
in
just
there.
Just a reminder, we have a Discord and a channel devoted to you suggesting movies to us.
Correct. This is all true. Truth has been spoken this day. So thank you, Chris, and thank you, Michael, for sending your emails in. The email address you can send your emails to is filmsack@gmail.com. That's filmsack@gmail.com. Real quick note, a PSA, next week there is no show per se, not like the normal one like we're having now. But we will have
there's a show, just not this kind of show.
Yeah, it'll be a watch-along of Star Trek
they
TNG
don't even
episode.
Know any of this.
Right. Yeah, I don't know why I'm telling any of this. Normally, originally, I was just going to be gone and there was no show. But now we're going to have like a supplemental thing. So forget what I said. There's a show next week. We're gonna bring you a live sacking of
TNG
episode.
Make sure
not to turn off your feeds to still collect episodes.
Yeah, there'll still be an episode next week. Do not put it on pause. And that'll be, like I said, a TNG episode. Those are always fun, so you guys can watch along with us. And the week after that, the movie is House, right?
Oh, yes, with William Catt and George Lynch.
What year? Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, the old one, dude.
1983 House, I believe it is.
Yeah.
This is one I've been wanting to have on FilmSack for a long time. And it is an Amazon Prime, unfortunately, but it's
a mystery.
And you have to look through. So 1985, look for the movie poster on Amazon Prime with the disembodied hand pushing a doorbell.
Ah, yes.
Yep. That's how I remember it the most. I don't
wait, is George Wendt in this?
Yep.
Wait.
Yep.
Norm!
Yep, Norm's
and
in
Richard Mull. So you got Bull, Norm, and Mr. Hinckley from Greatest American Hero.
That's fantastic.
William Catt?
Yeah.
Isn't he the Greatest American Hero?
Yeah, that's the guy.
He's the Greatest American Hero.
Yeah.
And this is a, this
changed
is
his name to Mr. Huntley or Hunley when right. John Hinckley shot at Reagan.
Yeah, but then they went it back and changed it again.
Then they went back and made it Hinckley again.
Hades were weird, man. Yeah, that's a thing, and I never saw it, but I saw that that tape in the Blockbuster every week. It just was always there. Yeah. And I was
always
think
I've ever seen this either. I'm very excited. This is
the only time I've seen it is in the theaters, and I just remember another audience member talking out loud during the theater during a scene in the movie, not even a pivotal scene in the movie, but it'll make sense once you see it, where somebody guy says, or I'm sorry, where the guy in the audience says, body's still warm.
Sweet.
That's all you need to think about while you're watching this film.
Even Wikipedia doesn't know what to do, because it's like House 1986 film, and then House IMDb is like 1985, and it's like,
yeah.
And House, it's a TV show on Fox with what's his name? Like, yeah, House.
Right,
Turns out House is a common word, you know, gets used a lot.
Amazing.
Yeah, weird. But we'll see it and we'll love it, I'm sure, for all the goodness it will give
now,
us.
Now, is this on Prime, you said?
It is on Amazon Prime. Yeah.
That's all right, though. Everybody's got Prime. We're fine.
Everybody doesn't have Prime. Well, I don't have Prime.
A lot of people have Prime. Dunaway has a giant bin of DVDs he bought that he just can dig through and go, oh, here's that one on House I never watched. Because that's how you live, man.
Now, it worked out for me this past week because I was used to Stars. So let's just see where House is on Just Watch. That's where I usually go, justwatch.com. And then I try to look at what streaming services have it. Let's see. I may be buying this one. I have enough time to get it in.
Or just rent it. You don't want to buy it.
Or rent that.
Yeah.
You don't know what I want. Rent that.
Rent that.
And you won't get it shipped to you very quick because you don't have Amazon Prime.
Yeah, I actually have
a secondary Amazon Prime where I am a person who gets the free shipping but not the video stuff.
Oh.
So if I get the full Prime, I have to pay for the whole thing. I don't really see the benefit of paying $89 per year just to watch the video stuff.
Well, they have
Good Omens is the reason.
Good Omens is good. All of they have great original programming.
And the High Castle.
Yep. Awesome. The Patriot. Whatever. Fantastic. Goliath, at least season one.
Oh, really good. Yeah. Bosch
is great. Bosch is awesome. They have great original content.
Like 1,000 reasons to get it.
Yeah.
Brian.
They are right, like in terms of like
you might as well be saying
you might as well be saying
words like it's got chocolate cake and it's got lemon meringue pie, because none of those shows mean nothing to me because I haven't watched any of them.
and you'll get your anchor recharging your batteries and your anchor cables in 2 days.
Yeah.
I already do that now. I told you I get the shipping part already.
Oh, yeah, that's true. All right.
Well, now you won't feel guilty about it because it won't be on somebody else's.
Gee, I hardly have anything to watch now. What with the Netflix and the Hulu and everything else I have. Geez, I hope I'm struggling to find something to watch.
It's rough, man. We understand. We feel you. All right. That's going to do it for the show. Thank you all for joining us. We'll be back next week. Filmsack.com is the website. You can go there and get everything you need. Filmsack@gmail.com again is that email address, and you can follow us on Twitter @Filmsack. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Das wird an ja.
We'll see you next time.
Avenge me!
There you go.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.